Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Child Protection and Sport Unit. We're part of the NSPCC and funded by UK Sports Councils. Our work supports organisations to safeguard all children taking part in sport.
In this series, we'll be talking about disordered eating and eating disorders in sport. This content may be sensitive to some individuals. If you need further support or know someone who might need support, we've included links to organisations that can support you on our website at thecpsu.org. Hi, I'm Carol Billington-Wood, and today I'm being joined by Carolyn Plateau, a lecturer in psychology at Loughborough University. The aim of this minicast is to think about creating positive cultures around food, weight and shape, and it's relevant to whatever sport you're working in, and it relates to everybody really around that responsibility to create a safe sporting environment so that there isn't this overemphasis placed on weight, and particularly relevant when we're talking about young people and some of the risks that we've highlighted in the section when we talked about transitions and monitoring of weight. So it'd be really interesting, Carolyn, just to sort of, I guess, to look at how we can promote healthy weight and eating practices within a sport.
Yeah, and this, you know, this is a really good, really important issue, as you've highlighted already, Carol. It's not, you know, we're talking about almost culture shift in some contexts or some environments where, you know, there's been a heavy emphasis on weight and shape and a heavy emphasis on weight monitoring and things for many years, and we're not suggesting, I guess, that some of these things will be an instant fix or that they'll provide solutions overnight, but I think there's some really, hopefully, some useful nuggets for people to take away and think about how they can start to adopt some of these practices or more positive practices within sport, which will hopefully then help to cultures to evolve and help to allow younger athletes to develop in a space that's safe and that helps to prevent against some of the eating problems and disordered eating that we've talked about so far today. So in terms of, I mean, I think one of the key things to perhaps highlight here, Carol, is around the fact that, you know, nutrition and eating and food are fundamental parts of being an athlete. And if we I think when we talk about eating disorders and disordered eating, certainly from some of our research with coaches, has told us that people are very scared to bring up these topics. People are very scared to have these conversations and to will often just shy away from any discussions around food or eating for fear of triggering a problem or for fear of uncovering an issue that they wish they perhaps hadn't. When in actual fact, you know, the argument is that actually some of these conversations should be normalized, and we, you know, instead of creating a kind of environment of silence or a you know, a culture of silence around some of these issues, we want athletes and others to feel like they can have open and honest conversations about their relationships with food, about their relationships with their body, because in essence it means that we can then pick up on any issues at a much earlier stage and help to try and resolve those before they become problematic. So, you know, I think trying to have normal, productive, open conversations about nutrition and eating is really, really important, regardless of whatever sport or environment you're working in. And then to think about, you know, what are some of those practices that you can do or that your environment, your organisation can embed to try and make sure that there are some positive practices going on in relation to some of those nutrition refueling strategies, in order to prevent things like REDS and also disordered eating and eating disorders. So there's lots of good practice going on in lots of different clubs across the country, and I'm sure you probably have some ideas of your own in terms of some of these positive practices. But things like encouraging athletes to think carefully about their recovery practices after a session or after a competition. Can you encourage them all to bring a snack if they're immediately after a session? You know, what does that snack look like? How can you make sure that it's appropriate and it's sufficient in order to make sure that it's kick-starting that recovery process? Can you encourage athletes to make sure they have a really good meal within a certain time frame after a training session or a competition? Could you instill a tuck shop for example, which is available for after sessions, selling healthy snacks and drinks, rather than leaving athletes to have to go into their vending machine to get something to eat if they've forgotten to bring something with them. Some of these things will work in some organisations, others won't, and that's fine, but it's thinking about what you can do within your environment that's appropriate for the athletes that you're working with, and the level and the kind of commitment that they have to their sport at present.
I think what I'm hearing is that nutrition is just a fundamental part of being an athlete, isn't it? And some of the, you know, the things you talked about, sort of the opportunity to refuel quickly afterwards and in a healthy way. And often for young athletes, it may be their parents that need to hear some of these messages. I think that's where my mind was starting to think about how organisations can sort of get that positive message across to parents who are probably, you know, driving perhaps, you know, straight to from school or to another event or something, and it's making, I think, clear that, you know, this healthy sort of refueling is just a part of sport.
Absolutely, and yeah, it was parents are often a fundamental piece in this process when they often get forgotten, or perhaps the information isn't being made available to them when it could be. And you're absolutely right. Parents are often, particularly with adolescent athletes, there will be the responsible for food provision, for timing of food, for the type of food that's being provided, and often that's quite a big responsibility for parents to take on, particularly if they haven't been involved in sport before, and making sure that there's some good resources, perhaps support sessions for coaches, for parents, will be important to make sure that they're on board with some of the positive practices that clubs and organisations are trying to put in place.
Just following on from that one, Carolyn, it'd be good just to talk about, I guess, some of the positives about language and practices around food and eating within organisations, how they can maybe, I guess, really sort of have a positive impact on these environments and cultures that, you know, people are participating in, but staff and other coaches are working within.
Yeah, really, really good point about, you know, and I think some of this is about being cognizant of the type of language that's being used within these organisations, within your organisation, around food and weight and eating behaviour. And to really, you know, just spend a bit of time reflecting on the type of language that's being used and if there's ways in which some of that could be changed or could be improved to make it more flexible, more open. We've talked a lot on this minicast series around, you know, making sure we're not too fixed in our views around stereotypes of appearance or stereotypes of body sizes and shapes. Thinking really carefully around how we embed practices, new practices around weight monitoring, if that's something that's relevant for your organisation. And I think the same goes for language, you know, around weight and shape. I think it's trying to avoid very black and white thinking or dichotomous thinking around having a good body shape or a bad body shape, or these are good foods and these are bad foods. You know, everything's an appropriate food in the appropriate quantities. You want to try and avoid this kind of black and white thinking that can come with and perhaps lead on to more distorted relationships with food. And, you know, thinking carefully about drawing comparisons between athletes, so trying to avoid that really. It's not usually appropriate to make judgments about athletes in terms of their appearance, and certainly not to vocalise those within a training environment or a competition environment, because it inadvertently perhaps sometimes places this really overemphasis on the importance of body weight and shape for performance, when we know that success comes in lots of different sizes and shapes. And you know, going back to some of the things we've talked about on some of the other minicasts around avoiding things like public humiliation around weight and shape, public weighing, public anything that isn't done sensitively or privately has the potential to cause some distress for individuals. So just reflecting on the type of language and the types of even your own mindset around weight and shape and how that might transmit certain messages around weight and shape to the athletes that you're working with, because sometimes we don't realize that we ourselves might have an unhealthy relationship with food or our body, and that gets communicated in different ways to the people that we talk to and the athletes that we work with.
It's interesting because it starts to move on to sort of like thinking about some of the relationships and the supportive relationships in sport. And I'm thinking often the sort of the impact of the team members and peers can be so vital, can't it, in terms of, you know, where you might see support or gain support in sport. And I guess that translates into this area too, doesn't it, Carolyn?
It absolutely does. Yeah, some of the work that we've done within my research team has been around trying to understand the influences of teammates when it comes to disordered eating practices, but also healthy eating practices. And we know that you know, teams that are characterized by supportive, good quality relationships between teammates and between peers, and which are, you know, relatively conflict free, and where there's kind of healthy attitudes towards food, they tend to thrive. People, athletes tend to thrive in those environments, and we see lower levels of disturbed eating practices and disturbed exercise behaviours in comparison to those teams or those environments where there's high levels of interpersonal conflict, there's you know, just poor quality relationships between, where there's tendencies towards comparison, or even where there's one or two athletes who are displaying disordered eating behaviours, those can become normalised quite quickly within teams. So it's really important, you know, to be aware of what's going on in the terms of the dynamics of the group that you're working with. Are there pockets of conflict? Is it generally supportive? How can you encourage more supportive relationships between your teammates and the athletes that you're working with? And how can we think about promoting positive practices in relation to food? Having good positive role models within there will be really important. And it's sometimes, yeah, it can be really tricky, but I think for any coach, if you think that, or anyone working within the sporting environment, professionals, if you think that there's an athlete within your group who may have disordered eating practices, then it's really important to try and be proactive about that and do something about that at an early stage. Because if you, as I've just said, it can be quite contagious sometimes to other members of that group if an individual is engaging with unhealthy eating practices that then can spiral out of control, not only for that individual, but also for the rest of the training group as well.
It's interesting when you talked about the sort of positive role models as well, isn't it? And sort of highlighting, I guess, you know, being a positive role model, and when you see good practice, sort of, I guess, talking about that good practice, because nutrition is, like you say, it's just the fundamental part of being an athlete. But I think one of the things that we've sort of recognised over the years is that sometimes some of the eating disorder type concerns or other mental health well-being concerns, they're sometimes not necessarily picked up as a safeguarding concern, and organisations might think, you know, actually, you know, this isn't somebody abusing somebody else, so they don't necessarily recognise it. Or they may even say, oh, well, the person was 19, they weren't a child, you know, so they didn't sort of highlight it, that, you know, this is a safeguarding concern and should be dealt with as the same as any other concern. So I guess it's a little bit about, you know, if you suspect a problem, what do you do? And you talked about that early, sort of, you know, not waiting till things look really bad or really worrying. Actually, if you're just a little bit concerned, then it's about doing something early, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, eating disorders, particularly once they get ingrained, are become more difficult for professionals to treat, and they do become more challenging and more chronic conditions the longer they're allowed to kind of embed themselves, and you know, the habits around eating become kind of, yeah, more ingrained. Trying to intervene as early as possible if you suspect an issue is really, really important. And you know, that can be really difficult as a coach. You can feel like it's outside your remit, perhaps, like you said, it's not always necessarily picked up as a safeguarding issue, but there will always be people within your club that you can seek guidance from, or your organization that you can seek guidance from, whether that's a club welfare officer or others within that environment who can advise you. But having an open and honest conversation with the athlete initially, if that's appropriate, with the athlete and parent perhaps, to see if there are any concerns that you can provide guidance on, or at least signpost on to other sources of support, is going to be the important first step. And, you know, I think it's important to emphasize here that we're not expecting people, whether that's sports professionals or coaches or others working within the sports environment, to necessarily treat and manage these problems, and because the vast majority of the time people are not qualified or able to do that. But what is important is signposting people to other sources of support at an early stage as possible, to make sure that they then can receive the support that they need in order to be able to prevent that from becoming something more serious or severe, which, as we know, is not linked with particularly positive outcomes. So making sure that you're proactive and perhaps not thinking, oh, well, I'll leave it to someone else, or it's not my responsibility to have this conversation, or shying away from it because it's a difficult conversation, which, again, some of our research has pointed to. It's more, you know, having that difficult conversation, raising it with someone who can support you, whether that's a club welfare officer or someone else within your organisation, to then signpost the individual on to further sources of support.
I think one of the things we often say is about assumptions. There can be an assumption sometimes when somebody sees something that's maybe concerning, that somebody else will perhaps do something about it, or somebody else will report it to the welfare officer in an organisation. And I guess with eating disorders, you could easily see it sometimes has a stigma almost around it, that people feel that it's hard to talk about it. And I think,
yeah.
You said about a difficult conversation, Carolyn.
Yeah, and I think, you know, particularly for, you know, if you think about it from the perspective of the individual who might be struggling, eating disorders are characterized by denial, by secrecy, by, you know, concerns about being thrown off the team or losing financial support or whatever it is. And admitting to having an eating problem is a very difficult thing for someone to do. So, you know, often it can just take a prompt from someone else to say, I'm worried about you, you know, is everything okay, do you want to have a chat, to just give them the space and the opportunity to have that conversation and say, well, actually no, I'm struggling at the moment. Equally, you know, some people may not feel ready to have that conversation, and it may require multiple attempts to have that initial to get somewhere and to try and signpost the individual to support. And I think we covered this in our other webinar, Carol, that around, you know, how you can deal with some of those situations if it doesn't always quite go how you planned it to go, if you're faced with denial or you're faced with an athlete who doesn't agree that there's a problem. And I think the key there is perseverance, and again, to seek support from within your organisation, or from some of the eating disorder charities, or from the GP, as to how you can more effectively, or how we can progress that to make sure that the individual does get the help that they need.
It's been really interesting to sort of think about creating, I guess, these positive cultures around food and weight and shape, all of these things that we've talked about. And I think that it feels like it's everybody's responsibility, isn't it, to sort of, you know, help to create, I guess, a safe environment for everybody, so that they can talk quite openly about fueling, and if they have concerns, they can talk about those and know where to go to, whether this is, you know, an athlete who's competing in an elite world-class program, or whether it's, you know, an athlete or a parent taking their child to a club on a regular basis.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes in some organisations that information around where to get further support won't always be clear, and as I said, the club welfare office is probably a really good place to start. I think if people listening to this mini cast are interested in finding out a bit more about eating disorders, disordered eating, having some of those early conversations, and, you know, signposting to sources of support, then we do have an online CPD course that people are very welcome to sign up for. We'll provide the link on the page, so do have a look at that if you're interested in finding out a little bit more about disordered eating and eating disorders in athletes. And if you'd like to learn a bit more about some of the things we've been talking about today, then that information is on there. But yeah, I think proactivity is around disordered eating and is essential in order to make sure that athletes receive the support they need and at as an earlier stage as possible.
Great. Thanks, Carolyn. Thanks for recording this mini cast with us and the whole series of mini casts. And as you say, there'll be lots of links to resources throughout the website. So thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this Child Protection in Sport Unit podcast. If you're looking for more information and resources on safeguarding children in sport, please visit our website at thecpsu.org.uk.